Welcome to Spirits on Spirits, a podcast where we mix ghost stories with a little liquid courage. I'm Aiden.
And I'm Nate.
And together we'll dive into the eerie, the unexplained, and the downright terrifying, all while enjoying a drink or two. Each episode we'll explore haunted places, ghostly encounters, and paranormal mysteries, pairing them with the perfect cocktail to keep our nerves steady. So grab a glass, turn down the lights, and join us as we sip, shiver, and swap some spine-chilling stories. Because here at Spirits on Spirits, the only thing stronger than the ghosts are our drinks.
Word. How we doing, everyone? Welcome to episode number dose of Spirits on Spirits. It's good to be back. For those of you that listened to the first episode, welcome back. For those of you that are joining us for the first time, welcome. We are Spirits on Spirits. If you didn't listen to the first episode, definitely go back and give that one a listen. That is our inaugural episode. The city that we look at in that one is Salem, Mass, our hometown, one of the ghostliest cities in the country, I would say. We're excited to be back. Little recap of what Spirits on Spirits is we are a boozin' and booin' podcast. So we're going to hit you with a different drink in a different city each week. The drink will be related to the city in some way, shape, or form. And then the city will be one with haunts, ghouls, and stories to be told. The episode coming to you live right now is based down in New Orleans, the Big Easy. Yeah. Aiden, do you want to tell the people what we're drinking tonight?
Yeah, tonight it is a Sazerac, which happens to be the official cocktail of New Orleans. So what you're going to do is you're going to do some cognac, absinthe, a sugar cube, and two dashes of bitters. And that's what we're drinking. So cheers. Right.
Well, cheers to that. Cool.
Oh. Ah. Good stuff.
Good stuff. I am drinking a virgin one. I am not drinking anymore. So for those of you that listened to the first episode, that was me boozed up. And then from here on out, I will be doing the mocktail version. But Aiden's coming to you live with the locked and loaded version. So there will still be spirits flowing on spirits on spirits.
And if you want the mocktail version, there's plenty of whiskey alternatives out there.
Good
that
ones,
taste
too.
Just like the real thing.
So. Absolutely. Yeah, no, sponsors, hit us up because that'd be pretty sweet.
So tonight's episode is about New Orleans. We're each going to tell the story of a haunted location in New Orleans. I am going to begin. So the place that I'm doing is the Myrtle's Plantation.
Oh, cool.
Which is, it's slightly outside of New Orleans. It's in a place called St. Francisville, which is like just north of Baton Rouge.
Oh, okay.
So located in St. Francisville, the stunning Antebellum Mansion.
Ooh.
Which is just like a giant southern mansion.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes you think a lot of history, a lot of dark history potentially there.
Oh, yeah.
So just off the bat, you're like, all right, there's definitely some lives lived there, both good and bad.
Yeah. But it's a place loaded, like you said, with history and with ghosts.
Oh.
So some say that the spirits of past tenants and owners have never left. So let's dive into the stories that make the Myrtle's Plantation a hot spot for paranormal activity.
Let's do it.
So, built in 1796, the plantation was built by General David Bradford,
ooh,
also known as Whiskey Dave.
Ooh.
Because of
great start for Spirits on Spirits.
Dude, it's a nice nickname.
Nice. Although, wait. Nice guy or not nice guy? Because when I hear General down south, I'm thinking.
So, actually, I think you'll come to like this guy a little bit.
Oh, okay.
So, He's called Whiskey Dave because of his involvement in the Whiskey Rebellion, which was, it was like the first big tax that America did on its citizens when it first got established as a country, was the whiskey tax. So it was basically like a 3-year violent protest by farmers and such who didn't want to be taxed on whiskey.
Gotcha.
In case you were wondering, Whiskey Dave was on the rebel side.
Gotcha.
So he was on the cool side.
Yeah, he was holding it down.
Yeah. The property has been passed down through like many hands over the centuries. And with its long history, obviously, will come some mystery, some misery,
ooh,
some tragedy, and, if the stories are to be believed, some restless spirits.
Nice.
Arguably, the most well-known spirit is that of Chloe, who's a former enslaved woman whose spirit is said to still linger in the mansion. As the story goes, Chloe was owned by and forced to be the mistress of the plantation's owner, Clark Woodruff.
Ooh, that's not good.
So he took over the property after Whiskey Dave and his wife. So she was forced to be the mistress, and then fearing that she'd be cast aside and punished by Clark's wife, Sarah, if she ever found out about the affair, she would eavesdrop on the family's private conversations just to make sure that, like, she wasn't on
She was
her.
Good, yeah.
But she was caught by Clark one day, and as a punishment, he cut off her ear.
Oh, jeez.
And she was forced to wear a turban for the rest of her life.
Oh, my gosh.
To cover the fact that she didn't have an ear.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Chloe sought revenge.
Yeah, well, yeah. That makes sense.
So, allegedly, she poisoned a birthday cake that was meant for the Woodruff family. She was trying to just, like, hurt them and, like, get them sick.
Yeah,
so
like
that
a little,
would,
like, food poisoning
yeah,
type
so it,
situation.
Yeah, so I'll swoop in and be the hero kind of thing. Like,
okay.
Oh, I'll poison them, and then I'll have the thing that will save them.
Gotcha.
So they'll, like, look at me more favorably.
Sure, absolutely.
It didn't work out.
Oh.
So the plan went horribly wrong. His wife and two daughters ate the cake, and they all died.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, not good. Clark, death is never good.
No, no. I mean, they weren't the best people, but the kids, they were innocent.
Yeah, sure.
But Clark was off on a business trip, so he was clear. But when the other enslaved people found out what she had done, they wanted to cover their own butts.
Yeah.
So they were like, you know, we got to take things into our own hands.
Sure.
So she was hanged, and her body was thrown into the Mississippi River.
Oh, no.
And all that happened at the hands of the other enslaved people.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
They're like, we're not, it's not even like snitches get stitches. It was like, we're just going to murder you.
Yeah.
And
dispose of your body
in
the water.
Jeez.
Now, I do want to specify, according to the actual website for the Myrtles Plantation, Sarah and her children all died of yellow fever.
Yeah.
So there's... So there's people that dispute even the existence of Chloe.
Yeah.
But it's not out of the realm of possibility.
No, absolutely not.
Actually happened.
That makes a ton of sense that the people that are like, no, this is a beautiful, gorgeous plantation home with no dark history. Chloe didn't exist ever. Like, that makes total sense that they are
they would
want to
push that aside.
Yeah, that narrative.
Yeah. But since then, visitors and residents alike have reported sightings of a woman in a turban wandering the halls of the plantation.
Oh.
Some say that she appears in mirrors or in photographs taken on the property.
Whoa.
And then others claim to hear whispers when no one else is around. So there's actually a famous picture allegedly of Chloe. So when, I think it was like in the 90s, they were taking pictures of the property to get an insurance policy for it. And it took like 3 years for them to look back at the pictures. But when they did, I'll show you. And this picture will be up on our Instagram.
Nice.
You can go take a look and see what I'm showing Nate right now. But it's a picture of, actually, do you want to describe what you're seeing?
Let me see. So I have not seen this at all. So pulling up picture, Myrtle's Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana. It is a black and white picture. I'm looking at the outside of the building, and definitely like it's like a southern kind of like porch, I would say, and that is absolutely a figure, it looks like, right? Like,
yeah,
very much to the point where I'd be like, okay, that's just a person.
Right.
Like, that's a person in this picture. They're up against like a white wall, and it's the silhouette of a person kind of wearing, like, I'd describe it as almost like, you know, hunched over shoulders after like years of heavy life.
Yeah.
They're facing away from the wall, but you can clear as day make out the shape of a head and a body that's wearing like a long gown. I mean, I would say I'm, based on this picture, definitely leaning towards that being, off the bat, like if you showed me that picture without knowing the story, I'd say that's just a person in the picture. But if they're claiming that to be Chloe, I'd 100% believe that.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, like, if you look closely, you can see, like, through the person. Like, so they're standing in front of, like, a wall of, like, siding on the side of the building. And you can see, like, the lines of where each, like, board ends. So it's really, it's one of the more convincing pictures I've ever seen of a ghost. But she's just one of the many spirits that are said to haunt the Myrtle's Plantation.
Ooh, there's more.
Another infamous legend is that of the ghost children. So many visitors report seeing apparitions of young girls in 19th century clothing playing on the grand staircase.
Wait, is that the cake kids?
So they're also seen, but they're mostly... I'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, okay. All right.
They're also seen.
Sorry for jumping in. So there's more kids.
Yeah, so these are our other kids. And they're seen, like, playing on the grand staircase, peering through windows. And then sometimes people will hear, like, children's laughter when there is no one else around.
Jeez. But yeah. So, like, happy kids. Like, these kids seem to be, like, playing around, goofing off.
Yeah.
Just new boot goofing.
Yeah, just goofing.
Got just goofing.
Just goofing, just hanging.
Ghouling and goofing.
And then there's the haunted mirror. So inside the house, there's this ornate mirror that is said to have trapped the souls of Sarah Woodruff and her children.
Whoa.
Comes full circle with the kids.
Yeah.
Some visitors claim to also see handprints appear on the glass or shadowy figures lurking behind them when they look into the mirror.
Gee.
That would creep the crap
out of
me.
Yeah, that would definitely creep the crap out of me, too. Yeah, that's a... Mirrors are weird, and I feel like spook mirrors are extra weird. Like, that is definitely something that, like, because I feel like anytime you see something in a mirror, you just, like, I don't know, like, you can see.
Like, you see it, like, but
you
don't
know,
you can't
register
like,
it as, like, fully there. Like, if you're, like, in the bathroom doing the, like,
you
can
see can't size it
behind.
Up.
No, 100%, but, like, you'd also, too, like, I feel like anytime you're looking in a mirror, you're looking... You're looking at what's in front of, like, in the mirror. Like, you're not just, like, passively looking at a mirror. You're looking at a mirror. So anything that's behind you catches your eye. Any movement catches your eye. So I definitely think, like, anytime you see something in a mirror, you're like, oh, what was that? And then you turn. And then it's not there. And you're like, oh.
No, 100%.
Ooh.
That would... I'd be noping out of there real quick.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. But... Other paranormal investigators, including famous ones like Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters.
Oh, they've been there?
Yeah, they've stayed at the Myrtle's Plantation, and they've reported eerie encounters and unexplained noises and cold spots throughout the house.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I guess, do you know, like, because I know a lot of paranormal stuff, and I guess I'm just not super well-versed, like, the cold spots. What are the cold spots?
I honestly have no idea. I mean, I know that, like, they drain energy, so maybe that's part of it. Like, they're taking the energy away from that spot or something.
Okay.
But I honestly have no idea.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I think, like, maybe that's something we look into for the next... Because I think that's one of the most common paranormal like encounters, people are like, oh, it got really cold. It's like, well, what is that? What does the cold mean? Like, obviously, it has something to do with energy, but like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So,
no, I don't know.
I don't know either. We should definitely look into that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very cool. So that's the Myrtle's Plantation.
Yeah. So
it's super cool.
What if we're gonna give it like a haunt or not? Like haunt or nah? What do you think?
I think based on the picture, like just the picture alone, points towards haunt.
Yeah,
in my mind,
I agree. I would definitely say that. I tend to reiterate from the first episode, I tend to lean more towards the believer side. Aiden tends to lean more towards the non-believer side. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I think, you know, based on pictures, pictures are a lot.
They're like, hard to dispute.
Yes, 100%. Something as clear as that. Like, I do hope people go to our Instagram and see it.
Yeah.
Because that is definitely a picture that is one that you're like, whoa, what's going on here?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think I'm willing to, like, look at places as though, If anywhere was to be haunted, would this place be haunted? And if anywhere was going to be haunted, I think that the Myrtle's Plantation is definitely on that side of that spectrum of, like, probably haunted.
I agree.
Yeah.
We should send it down there for a trip.
Do a little Bourbon Street, a little Myrtle's.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That would definitely be sweet. Yeah, definitely. If you guys want to see some of us like in action, like, you know, going down to these places, definitely let us know via the comments or on Instagram or something like that, because, you know, if you guys want to see it, we're definitely willing to do it. I'm a little bit more hesitant than Aiden.
I'm amped to do it, actually.
It would take some encouraging from my standpoint.
Whatever the people want.
I was going to say, I'm a man of the fans. So if the fans want it, then they will have it. But it will also, part of the video or whatever we film in those places will be me going, and running.
And wetting your pants.
Huh? Yeah. I'd be pretty fucking scared. I would be pretty fucking scared. But yeah. Cool. Well, that's a good story. So, my story, I prepared. I am going to need some help with the pronunciation. For someone who has French DNA, I am not great at speaking it. So, some of these pronunciations I might have you help me with a little bit.
Sounds good.
But my story takes us to the center of the Big Easy. It is. Ooh. It's in the middle of New Orleans. I was looking at stories, and I was looking at places to do stories on, and I was looking at, like, hey, like, you know, starting to do the research, what place, what story do I want to bring to the table for this episode? And I looked at a couple, and there was a couple that I thought were really cool, but the second I saw this story, I was like, this is crazy. And I ended up doing a lot more research than I even set out to do, just because of there's so many layers to this story. There's the actual location itself, and I'll get to that in a second, but there's the people behind it, and then there's like the story of the people, specifically the one lady that is really the driver of negative energy. She is the person that committed a lot of acts in this place, but also to her, there's just a lot of mystery and a lot of just darkness that surrounds her and her life. So I ended up, like I said, doing a lot of research, and I wasn't expecting to do that. Let me just get into it. So the house that I picked, or the location that I picked, is the I'm going to butcher it. Can you help me?
Is it Lowry?
Lowry?
I think that's how you say it.
Okay, the Lowry Mansion. It is, like I said, in the middle of New Orleans.
Wait, is that the place that that American Horror Story season's based on?
I believe so. So I have never watched the show, but in my research, they did talk about how she herself, Madame Lowry, is the basis of a character from, I believe the season was called Coven?
I think it's Freak Show.
Freak Show? Are you sure?
I'm pretty
okay,
sure.
Okay, so I might be off with that, but needless to say, yes, there is a connection between one of the seasons of American Horror Story and Madame Lowry. So, the woman who really is at the center of the story is Delphine Lowry. She is definitely one of the most popular ghost stories in the city of New Orleans, which obviously, like, that's saying something. It's a city that has a lot of history and a lot of history. Ghost history specifically. So she has captivated the public's, you know, fascination for over 200 years. There have been reports of paranormal activity at the Lowry Mansion for over 200 years, which is crazy.
Jeez.
So I want to start, I think, with who she was, because I think that will paint a better picture of her, and then kind of getting into the house from there, because I think to understand the house and what happened in that house, we really need to understand who she was first.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, Madame Lowry was born, she was born Marie Delphine McCarty. She was born March 19th, 1787, to her parents, Louis and Marie. Delphine was a member of a pretty powerful clan or family in that region, in the New Orleans, Louisiana region. It was the McCarty clan. They were military officers, planters, merchants, all kinds of things, lawyers. The upper echelons of society were dominated by, you know, her relatives.
Okay.
So definitely
a well-to-do.
Yeah,
well-connected.
Yes, absolutely. Like, you know, born into a wealthy family that had the pedigree to go along with it.
Right.
So she and a lot of her family were, you know, owned and managed extensive, you know, amounts of land in that region, which, you know, at that time, land equaled wealth and power and stuff like
right.
that. With that came, though, a lot of enslaved people. So they did own a lot of slaves combined throughout their family. So, you know, I'll get more into it, but slaves are a massive piece of this story.
Massive piece of both stories today.
Yeah, massive piece of both stories. And I think, you know, it makes sense, right? Like, it's a very
dark side of history.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, it's one that's apparent throughout history, but it's one that is filled with just such sadness, and you're trapped. And you know, if you look at, you know, the theory behind paranormal activity and paranormal energy and paranormal spirits, there is this constant theme of being trapped.
Yeah.
And the energy and the being is not able to, excuse me, move on. So it you know, when I didn't even think of it till you just said it, but it makes so much sense. She was the first child of her parents. I think Let me restate that. She actually wasn't the first child. I'm looking at my notes a little incorrectly, so I apologize about that. She was the second child. The interesting thing was that she wasn't on record at the church, so her like baptism records weren't on the books for another 5 years after she was born. So it wasn't until a while after. So the actually, I'm misquoting my dates a little bit. No, it was 5 years. 1970, no, sorry. 1793, December 26th, 1793 exactly was when she first was on record in the church. So her baptism records weren't on the books for 5 years after she was born.
So was it actually 5 years before she was baptized, or was it 5 years just before they recorded?
So they had a record of it. So what I found was that this was actually common practice slash not. It wasn't uncommon in cases where the infant was close to death. So I don't have any records or couldn't really find any records of her being ill as a baby, but they do say that this practice of not like putting the baptism on record is, like I said, not uncommon in cases where the child is close to death.
That's interesting. Yeah. I would think it would be the opposite, where like they would be trying to rush it.
Rush the baptism. Yeah. So yeah, that's actually a good question. I don't know if she wasn't baptized until after, or like she was baptized, but they rushed the baptism so much that it wasn't like, oh yeah, we should have written that down. Yeah. Honestly, good question. I think that's, you know, definitely something that we can look into. So I don't have much more about her childhood. There is some connection to later parts of her life in terms of the way her father and other male members of her family operated. And like you brought up in your story, so again, another similarity is it seems like most of the male members of her family had mistresses that were women of color. So that is something that I think she saw a lot of as a child, which definitely plays into what she was like as an adult. The next step kind of in our journey of her life is her marriages. So in 1800, on June 11th specifically, she got married. She got married to a gentleman with a rather long name. It's a Spanish rather long name, too. So I will torture my way through this one. But it was Don Ramon de Lopez y Anguilo Caballero de la Royal de Carlos.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so he was a high-ranking Spanish officer. And they got married at the St. Louis Cathedral.
So what would that have made her name?
I don't know.
Madame de la Royale or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what part of that is his surname and stuff like that. So I'm not 100% sure. So their marriage was pretty short-lived, actually, because 4 years after they got married, they went and traveled to Spain. And there are kind of different accounts of it, but on the way to Spain, like in Havana. So they were in Havana on their way up to Madrid. And he died mysteriously in Havana.
Sounds kind of sketchy.
Sounds a little sketchy. Really isn't any records, like in terms of like no one really knows what happened. But we do know that during the voyage, Delphine gave birth. So she did give birth and had a daughter that was named Marie Borgia Delphine Lopez y Anguila de la Candelaria. nicknamed Borgita, which I don't know what that means.
I don't know either.
But fun little nickname. Unless it means something bad, don't quote me on that one. their stay in Spain was pretty short-lived. He died in Havana. Really no records as to why, how, any of that kind of stuff. We know she gave birth. On the way, they stayed in Spain for a little bit, but then they returned back to New Orleans, both mother and daughter. Then she got married again. She got married now to a man by the name of Gene Blank. He was...
His last name was Blank?
Well, B-L-A-N-Q-E.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Blank, Blanc.
Blanc, like Blanc, Blank. A man who carried many titles. So he was a jack of a lot of trades, all of which were wealthy, though. He was a banker, a merchant, a lawyer, and a legislator. So
that sounds like a lot of conflicts of interest.
Yes, a lot of conflicts of interest, but a lot of money.
A lot of money put in his own pocket,
yes,
by himself.
Absolutely.
Got
absolutely.
It.
They got married in June of 1808. So they get married 1808. So that's 8 years after. So
she, you said she was born in 93.
No, so she was born in 19, or I keep saying 19, I'm sorry. For the audience, I am dyslexic. So anything that has like a 9 in it or something, it flips them around. So I do apologize if I stumble through some of this. She was born in 1787.
So 1787, so now she's,
yeah, like
21. She has a kid and she's twice married.
Twice married, yes.
Wow,
so, yeah,
crazy.
Like a little timeline of her life. Like 1787 born, 1793 on record in the church, 1800 married, has a kid.
Wait, so she was 13 for her first marriage?
No, 17. 83. She was born at 83.
Oh,
so okay, 17, okay, okay. Which isn't great, but like a little better. I think back,
yeah,
in the time that was probably common.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then 4 years later after that, she had a kid.
Okay.
So she was 21 with her first child.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. 21 with her first child.
I follow.
In 1804. Then 1808, she is, like you said, twice married, with a daughter. So they, the marriage between her and Jeannie Boy is significant because that, excuse me, is when they buy the house, or they buy a house located on 409 Royal Street in New Orleans. And that is where our story is going to take place. Now, at this point, there hasn't been any history, like we're not really coming into a house that has paranormal activity already. Like,
okay,
you know, they just get married and they buy a house. The house is totally normal, as
so
we know
creates
of.
Creates the haunting.
Yeah, we will get there, but yeah, she is definitely the catalyst when it comes to the ghoulin' and bullin'. So they get married. They buy the house on 409 Royal Street. During their marriage, Delphine gave birth to 4 more children. So she had 5 in total now.
Yeah.
But 4 kids from Gene, and 1 from her previous marriage. And then he died in 1816. So, yeah.
Blanc did.
Blanc did. Yes, okay. Blanc did. Yeah, Gene did. Sorry. Not the children. As far as I can tell, based on my records, all 5 of the children are alive at this point. But yeah, no, definitely. So, 1816, how old is she? She's in her 30s, right?
You said 83 she was born?
Yeah.
1783, so yeah, she would be...
87, sorry.
87, so she'd be... You said 6...
1816.
She'd be 29.
29. So 29. Let's do a final tally. 29. five kids,
twice widowed.
Twice widowed. Which, like,
that's a
the first time, sad. Second time, sad, but you're like, what's going on
here?
Wait
a minute.
What's going on here? And really, we have no record. Like, there's no real suspicion of her. Like, no one's like, hey, she's potentially murdering these husbands.
Yeah.
So that really doesn't come up. But it's definitely something that, as I was reading stuff, was like, that's a little strange.
I guess, like, especially in, like, high society.
Yeah.
They probably just don't suspect that people will do that.
Yeah, I think, yes, I definitely agree. Like, you know, it'd be one thing if she wasn't coming from money, but, like, it seems like she's coming from a lot of money herself.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that I thought you were going to point out, but didn't, but so I'll point it out, is I think in high society, and we'll see it a little bit more down the road in her story, I think in high society, a lot of things get covered up, especially at this, like,
true
stage where it's like, you know, she's from a wealthy family herself. She's marrying into these wealthy families. Like, people don't like press. People don't like bad press. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was things going on that were getting silenced. And really, we'll see it a couple more times in her story of, like, you know, she had she had things on her side. She had power on her side. She had privilege on her side, which really, it took the town folk or the city folk to really step up and kind of thwart her from being not a good human being. So let's get more into her story before we get into her not being a good human being.
Yeah.
So she got married a third time. In 1825, so 9 years after her first or second marriage, she got married to a gentleman, and this is definitely the most controversial of her marriages.
Right.
She married Leonard Louis Nicholas LaLaurie. Well, how do I pronounce it?
I think it's LaLaurie.
LaLaurie. He was a transplant from France, if you couldn't guess by the name.
Yeah.
And he was a physician. So he was a doctor. Now, from what I read and found, like, him being a doctor, to, like, in today's terms, would more so translate to him being, like, a chiropractor.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of the discipline and stuff that he practiced. But, you know, back in that day, they didn't really specific, like, a physician was a physician type of thing.
Right.
So he was a physician. They had a little bit of a meet cute.
okay.
They had a little bit of a meet cute. So they didn't meet just, like, randomly. One of her daughters from her second marriage had deformities. Where she had problems with her spine and definitely was came down and, like, had subsequent illnesses from it.
Right.
So they met because he was hired to cure the girl. So Louis LaLaurie used a bunch of different medical equipment, all kinds of, like, stuff that we'd probably look at this day and age and go, whoa, that does not look medical at all. because, like, you know, I think, like, you know, with a modern day lens, you look at it and you're like, that is someone with just disabilities. And, you know,
yeah,
it's not something that you try to cure or, like, fix, but it's something that, like, you know, just you obviously have to, you know, work with and on and stuff like that, but, like, to some extent just live with. So, and I think, like, you know, she was more so trying to, like, cure stuff. So, like, if, you know, she had some sort of, like, stuff with her spine, so, like, we're talking maybe scoliosis or something, like, she was trying to cure it. So, like, could you imagine someone with, like, scoliosis, like, getting their back cracked to try to, like, fit back into place? Like,
that's
that would
gotta hurt more.
So painful. So, I mean, the poor kid. But I think some of that was maybe the times, but it also seems like she is kind of a rigid human being, so she might have been like, absolutely not. I will not. And again, I think that ties back into this upper echelon of society thing of, like,
they want the appearance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So they met through that. As you would guess, she didn't get any better. But the one thing that did get better or grow was Delphine's love for the doctor. So she became enamored with him. But he was 20 years older than her, which honestly, at this point in her life, she's maybe what, 30s, he's 50. Like,
Yeah.
I don't think there's like,
It's not insane.
no, it's not insane. It's not insane. She's insane, but it's not insane. So yeah, there was some letters that show that he actually left New Orleans. He left, and then his brother actually sent letters to persuade him to come back. And the reason for it was that Delphine loved him, but also too she was pregnant with his child.
So did he leave to escape, or did he leave just like, was he like planning on leaving in the first place?
I think he was just planning on leaving. I don't think I have no record. He might not have known she was pregnant. I mean, he probably knows that he like plowed her. I would think that he
I
know
yeah.
that.
I would hope.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, so they definitely had sex because that's how babies happen and are born. So they definitely banged. But I don't know if he like was like, yeah, we porked, and then like he's dipping back to France. So yeah, that is something that happened. So yeah, he ended up coming back. Then so what was their address before? So they lived on 409 Royal Street. And then they actually, so in 1831, Delphine purchased the property at 1140 Royal Street, so on Royal Street as well.
Okay, so just down the
Yeah,
road.
just down the road. This actually is where our story starts to take place. I think I'm, did I misspoke and say that 409 was where it
It starts to
happened?
take a turn at this point.
Yeah, it starts to take a turn, but 1140 Royal Street is where our story actually
Okay, all right.
happens. So at this point, she's living there with two of her children. I don't know where the other ones went. Really couldn't find, excuse me, any records like where I was digging. But at this point, we know 1140 Royal Street, it's her and two of her children. Okay? She is married, so they do get married, but it apparently is not a happy one. They like there are accounts of the neighbors hearing them argue like profusely, like at each other's throats type of argue, which when I heard that, the thing, so two things strike me with that.
Yeah.
First one is like and we can definitely put a picture up on the Instagram so people can see it. But this is a mansion. Like this is a big fucking house. So
So for neighbors to hear
yeah,
it,
for
that's
neighbors, yeah,
crazy.
like for neighbors to be able to hear you argue and yell in a big house, it needs to be really loud. The one thing I will say, and I kind of thought of it after the fact, is New Orleans gets really fucking hot. My guess is they were probably opening windows because it
Yeah.
was really hot. So I do think that that might negate or kind of discount that a little bit. But again,
But still, I
you gotta
mean,
be pretty loud for like to be in a big house and to have people
yeah,
hear
even
you.
if you're like in a suburb and you hear your neighbor screaming at each other,
Yes.
that's intense. That's an intense
Absolutely.
argument. So for
Absolutely.
it to be like
Yeah.
in the nice area of town where like everyone's in mansions and the neighbors are hearing these wealthy
Yes.
people in a mansion
I know.
scream at each other.
Yes.
That's intense.
And again, like to pile on another layer, it's all about the appearance and stuff like that. So,
Yeah.
back then people are like, "Ooh, we would never like how uncouth of them to be arguing and stuff like that." Which I do think like some of that like still exists today. Like, have you ever been in public? Like, have you ever been at the airport or someplace and, like, you just hear a couple, like, screaming at each other and stuff like that? You're like, oh, like, it's weird. It is
Yeah, it's
weird.
uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. It sticks out. Like, obviously, everyone argues. Everyone in a relationship argues and stuff like that. So, like, that's normal, but, like, it does stick out. So, this is something that, like, was happening enough where enough people were hearing about it and, like, it was happening enough where in 2025, like, we still know that they were arguing really fucking loudly.
Yeah, that says something.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you could guess, that marriage didn't last super long. So in 1834, Louis packed his bags and shipped out to Paris. I don't actually know if he went to Paris, but he moved. He packed up and I believe went back
Good for
to
him, dude. He's the
France.
first one to get out alive.
Yeah. So apparently that is when shit really hits the fan.
She gets angry.
Not so much angry as like crazy. Like she went crazy because he left.
Okay.
So that is really the turning point. Like, we don't have any stories. We don't really know like much about her treatment of people before her husband left, or her third husband
Right.
Louis left.
Yep.
That apparently was the turning point for her. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. That was the snapping point where she went like full blown batshit crazy.
Okay.
And what started happening was that rumors started to spread that she was harming her slaves. So she was like physically abusing her slaves in this state that she was in. And so actually let me retrace my steps a little bit because he moved out in 1834, and there was actually an incident in 1833 that was so. And I guess I'm a little confused too because all accounts I read were that he moving out and leaving was like kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. But we have an incident from 1833 where she was harming a young slave girl. Leia, who ultimately fell to her death in the courtyard. So in 1833, there was a young slave girl, Leia, who fell to her death in the courtyard of the house. And like I said, died. So I
So was that due to the neglect, like the abuse and neglect, or is that just like is that just a an incident that might tie
I
in?
mean, like, I think she, like, fell out the window, which, like,
Fell in
yeah,
quotations.
like, I don't, I, like, we don't really have much, like, there, so let me keep going, because we don't have much in terms of pointing fingers of, like, you pushed her, you killed her.
I don't know, dude. She's got a lot of death around her right
No,
now.
she definitely does, and like I said, we don't have any accounts of that specifically, but there was a investigation that happened
Oh, okay.
that like ensued because of this incident. So it's definitely like this happened, and then everyone's like, "What? Like, we're gonna look into this type of thing," and the result of it, again, there was no guilty, there was no verdict, there was no case, there was no trial. But what ended up happening is that she was forced to free all of her slaves.
Oh.
So there must have been something going on to the point where, like, they were like, yeah, all of your slaves are free.
But I'm assuming, based on the fact that she was known for abusing her slaves, like long term, she was able to get more.
Worse.
Oh boy.
She bought them all back.
From who, though?
I like she tracked them all down and bought them all back.
Okay, so So when she freed them, did she have to sell them, or did she like free them and then pay them to get them back?
No, so like my guess is she sold. So I guess maybe that term freed is being used like
Okay, yeah.
loosely slash incorrectly. 'Cause like,
They were still enslaved,
yeah, maybe
obviously.
she, it was just like, you know, Delphine, like, you can't own slaves. We'll let you sell your slaves, make the money, but you're no longer, like, you can't own these slaves.
Yeah, or maybe like give them up
Yeah, or give
to
them
someone
up, like
else.
two people. But yeah, she tracked them down and bought them all back. Which, at that, like, this even isn't even like the evilest part of the story, but it's one that like stuck out to me as being so evil.
Because she wanted those specific
Yeah,
people.
like there's like something going on there where it's like, could you imagine? Like, there's obviously like neglect, abuse, harm, like above the regular, like, you know, being an enslaved person has a level of harm, neglect, abuse inherently in it. Like, if I own
Yeah.
another human being, there is abuse on my part. There is harm on my
Yeah,
part.
just by owning them,
Just
that's
by
abuse.
owning, yeah, absolutely, 100%. But there is a, like, she was doing more than that. We know, like, based on the accounts and the rumors and stuff like that, we know she was doing more than that. She was physically harming them, mentally abused. Like, there, she was a evil individual and was treating these people poorly and evil, like in an evil way. So that, like, just kind of thinking about it from that perspective of like, if you're someone who was enslaved by her, and then you, the court or like lawyers get involved and they're like, no, like she's not treating you guys right, like we're releasing you from her. Like, that must be like, obviously you're still enslaved, but there must have been some sort of feeling of like, phew, like I'm done with this woman. And then to have her buy you back is like the pit in the stomach of someone that had to experience that
Yeah.
is crazy.
Do you have any idea how many of them there were?
No, I don't. I do know that there was like I would say, no, I don't. I do know there was like more than three or four. Like, it was probably closer to like seven,
Okay.
based on the stories. I didn't have a specific number, but I do know that there was a incident that happened in 1834. So I've heard a couple of different accounts and read a couple of different accounts that. So in 1834, on April 10th specifically, there was a fire. There was a fire in the house. We know there was a fire in the house. There were some accounts that the fire happened during a party. There were some other accounts that the fire happened in the morning, which I guess also doesn't that doesn't neglect the fact, like, it could have happened in a party that just like went late.
Yeah.
So I've seen a couple of different stories. But the one that I'm going with, or the thing, the facts of the case that I'm sticking with are that in the morning on April 10th, 1834, a fire broke out in the mansion. And the fire destroyed part of the house. So fire destroys part of the house. When you have a fire, who comes to help with the fire?
Firefighters.
Firefighters, the fire department. So they come to help with the incident. And what ends up happening during this process, and they're like, oh, the house is on fire, we got to get everyone out. There was several slaves that were not known, or like they didn't know that they were there, and it was very clear that they were being starved, tortured, and chained in the upper part of the building. So they were like locked away. Like, so it wasn't even like slaves in the sense of like they were
In captivity, or like held.
like for function. Like, these
Right.
weren't people that she was using to do daily tasks in the house. She had them chained and locked away in the upper part of the house.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus.
Yeah, there's nothing good coming out of that.
No. So, like, this was a blocked off, chained off, like, a section of the house. There was even one account that, like, they boarded up the window. Like, there was no window, like, access. So, like, she was very much mistreating these people. So, there was, I think, 7 in that area of the house. So, she must have had more than. So, like, it probably was upwards of potentially 10. There is a story or account that the fire was actually started by a slave that was chained to the stove. So they started the fire as like a cry for help, basically.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So they uncovered this. Like people, the fire department brought out all these slaves that were chained up. They were being tortured, all this kind of stuff. And the accounts of what was going on in there range from like gross to like stomach churning level gross. Like there is a couple of accounts that people have said came up later. So there is some like discreditment of them in terms of like, you know, these accounts of what happened didn't really show up until like the early 1900s. So people were like, ah, we don't really know if that was true. But they were still accounts that were like published in newspapers and stuff like that. There was, it was said, and again, like these are ones that have to some extent been disproven, or at least there's people going, I don't know if it actually happened this bad. But there was some accounts that said she had a slave that was chained up that had its bones broken and then reset in different positions. So it was like this human being was like crawling around on the floor. Like it was like set as if it was like a spider or like animal-like person. So like literally breaking arms and legs and then setting them in ways that were not natural. So
that the person like walked around like an animal.
Basically. Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was one of them. There was another story or account that she had another slave with a hole drilled into the side of the head with a spoon in there to like stir his thoughts. Yeah. There was another one that she had another person cut open and had the insides like their intestines like wrapped around their like naked waist and stuff like that. So there are some very graphic like accounts of what she was potentially doing to these people. Again, those are stories that like came up a little bit later. So these might have been like dramatized
yeah.
a little bit. But hopefully. I also like hopefully again, like hopefully they were. But you know,
either way,
like, and you know, some of the accounts of what has happened, like, really paint this picture of a very, very, very dark energy. So even if things didn't happen to that extent, like, there was still enough very bad stuff to happen in this house that, you know, even in the modern day, we're seeing really bad encounters happening in this house. So yeah, that like was the end of her. And you know, what I alluded to at the beginning and what I thought was interesting was this happened, you know, there's a, like, you know, I think it happened more so back in the day, but I think it still happens now where it's like, you know, something happens like a fire and all your neighbors, all the people like go like circle around and, you know, kind of create a crowd type of thing. So there was a crowd outside as they were bringing these tortured, like, enslaved people out. So there was a lot of people seeing this happen, and a lot of people that were like, oh, like, fuck. And people went and told the sheriff, and they were like, okay, the sheriff's going to show up. And they waited all night, all morning. Like, the sheriff never showed up.
So was she arrested?
No, so that's the thing. So, like, it became clear, like, people waited for, from what I can tell, a while for the sheriff to show up and never did. So what I think, and this was for the most part a crowd of like common folk, quote unquote. So like these were average people. So I think what became clear to them was, oh,
she's rich, so
she's getting away with this. She is rich, so she's going to get away with this. So what they ended up doing was they took matters into their own hands and they stormed her house. And they started to destroy and like dismantle and take apart her house. Although, you know, you would love for there to be some justice involved.
Yeah.
She escapes. She gets away.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she escapes with, from what I can tell, the children in tow. So she and her children escape, you know, harm-free. Now, what happened to her, we don't really know. There were some accounts. So there's a couple different stories, I've read a lot, like, you know, doing the research for the last story and then or episode of the podcast and then this one and looking at a couple of different stories. Like, I have never seen a historical event that has so many different, like, this is one story, this is another story. Like, there's so many different, like, accounts or myths or rumors or stuff like that surrounding this one woman. One of the stories was that she escaped and went to Paris. So she moved to Paris with her children and then just lived out her days in Paris. There's another account that she moved back to New Orleans just under a different name. That one I tend to, like, believe less just because faces are a thing. Granted, she had a lot of money. Like, it could have been possible to just never leave the house and have people get everything. Like, you know, in all the times that she did leave New Orleans, she came back to New Orleans. So there was, like, and it seems like she has the money and the power and the influence to, like, maybe move someplace, like, just outside New Orleans on a big plantation and, like, have no one know. Like, if you're 20 miles outside the city, no one's going to, like, really know, type of thing.
Yeah.
But there was, so, and actually, the one thing we do know kind of corroborates both of those stories, surprisingly. So there was, let me look and see where I have it written down. Another one, sorry, they had another person that, another person that had their skin peeled back so you could just see the naked, like, tissue and flesh and stuff like that. It's hard to...
How do you even, like...
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, it is definitely... it's definitely weird. I'm trying to find... I had this written down somewhere. But, so, I might not be able to find it, like, right now off the bat. But there was an account that in New Orleans, in, like, an alleyway of, like, a cemetery, a groundskeeper found a plate that had her name on it, had her birthday, had the day she died, and it said she died in Paris.
But you said that was in New Orleans?
Yeah. So that's, like, kind of the, like, weird thing. So
But so then she never came back to New Orleans if she died in Paris. Or she just, like, went back and forth.
Yeah, but so how did the plate get there, though? It's the one thing.
Yeah. Maybe the kids?
Maybe the kids moved back to New Orleans after. That's not a bad idea. Because I do think the plate was found, like, a while. But also, what is the plate doing in, like, an alleyway in a cemetery? I know, right?
I don't know.
Like,
I hope that her, like, ship got, like...
Something, yeah, dude.
I hope,
like,
she, like, got stranded on a deserted island by herself and starved to death or something.
So, they're...
A terrible person.
Yeah. No, definitely, like, not a good person. So yeah, very interesting. It definitely, so that's really the history. Like at no point did I bring up like the spirits or anything in that. And I actually think I did that on the first podcast too. Like I went deep into the history because I think for me at least, I want to know the full history before I get into like the spirits, because I want to know what spirits are there, what type of energy, good, bad, demonic even, like what is going on there. So this is when we kind of turn the corner. Like obviously she is no longer in inhabiting, or at least her human form is no longer inhabiting that house. But like decades after, you start to see the paranormal stuff, or we start to see accounts of the paranormal stuff occur. So, like in the mid to late 19th century, the mansion became an all-girls school. So it was a school for girls of color. So it was like little girls of color
Nice.
in this house, and there was all kinds of stories of like the children, the girls getting like physically, like they would come to the teachers and they would have hit marks, they would have
Oh.
scratches, all kinds of stuff. They're like, "Who did this to you?" And they were like, "She did it. The woman did it." So there was multiple accounts. Multiple girls were having physical injuries, and then also two were accounting for it. There was a singular woman that was doing it to them.
Okay, so at first I thought like nice, 'cause it was like it was something that was so such a like dark and disturbing piece of history for so many people of color originally, and then it turned into like a place where people of color got to get educated.
Yeah.
But that's not
No. Yeah.
that's tough that she's like still there
Still there.
and still has influence over like the happenings there
Yeah.
and how people feel when they're in that building.
And like
That's
physically abusing them still.
yeah.
Yeah. So that was crazy. Another story too. So, you know, that is an instance. Then we move on. We're kind of like, we're in the 2000s now and stuff like that. I mean, like the common paranormal stuff is happening all the time. Like, and that's kind of a given. There's so much, you know, death there, like history, paranormal stuff. You're hearing the footsteps, you're hearing the voices, the echoes, the cold, all that kind of stuff is happening. But like, you know, the more standout stuff, you know, starting with the girls, like with the physical abuse. But then also too, there was a guy, there was a gentleman who lived in the house, and he was experiencing like weird. He even voiced it to friends. He was like, "There's a negative energy in this house. This house, this energy wants me out. This thing wants me out. I don't know what it was or is, but it will not rest until I am gone." And he was found brutally murdered in the apartment. Like it was an apartment inside the house, and he was found brutally murdered inside the apartment. And the police went and they were like, "Oh, this is a robbery gone wrong," because of just how brutal the murder was. Like it was like, "Oh crap, like oh, this maybe he came back, like someone was robbing the house and they like he
Right.
came back," so they like brutally murdered him. However, when they did like an accounting of stuff, there was not a single valuable taken. So all his valuables were still there.
The part that sticks out about that story to me is like, how do you live in a house like that and not know anything about the history?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think.
Like if it's like that. This place is famous. Like it's on every ghost tour.
Yeah.
It's on tons of TV shows.
Yeah.
Like I feel like if
But if you're
you
not
live in
see, like,
there.
I think it's very easy. Like, if you're not someone that, like, first off, this was like early, this was like not, this is modern day compared to the 1800s, the early 1900s, but I don't think that happened necessarily, like,
After Zach Bagans had already
yeah, like,
been
I
screaming
don't,
at ghosts in
yeah,
there.
exactly. Like, so I do think there was a little bit of that. I do think, like, you know, a house with that much dark history, yeah, like, people probably know, but I do think, like, New Orleans is such, like, a transplant city. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't, unfortunately, like, I don't know a ton about him and his story. Yeah. Maybe that's, like, you know, it would be awesome to do a follow-up about these in New Orleans. Like, if people wanted us to go, like, and I would do so much more research about him, his story, the girls, and their encounters and stuff like that. But, like, for right now, I don't have a ton about him. But I do think, I agree with what you're saying, but I do think also, too, there's a chance you're in this place and don't fully, like, know what's going on.
Yeah, no, it's, I could definitely see it. I just feel like, if I don't know, like, obviously, and I'm also looking at it from a 2025 lens, but, like, if I'm living in a place that's so famous for being such a disturbing building, I at least know about it. And sure. Like, I can attribute the hauntings to, oh, like, some crazy stuff happened here.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no, so that was definitely, like, you know, hearing that was one that, like, you're like, dude, there's something going on here, because, like, the girls are feeling it, and then this guy gets brutally murdered, nothing gets taken, like, there is, and he's, like, telling his friends, like, there is a dark energy here, there is a dark energy, like, you know, this house definitely, in my mind, haunted as, like, fuck, like, haunted,
yeah,
to the max. So, and that's actually not even where our story ends.
Oh, boy.
But, like, in terms of, like, the really, like, solemn, like, oh, geez, like, there is bad energy here. There was a horrible human being that treated other human beings as just, like, not human.
Right.
So, yeah, definitely, like, reading all this was like, oh, my gosh. And then if I told you that this story got to involve one of the premier actors of our generation, would you have believed me? You don't know who the actor is, but just, like, if I...
Only in the way that I could see it being, like, a massive movie.
So...
Like a horror movie. Like, I could see, like, a... I'm trying to think of, like, who would be in a movie like that. Like a Nicholas Holt. Like,
I could see him. So, okay. Yes and no. The house was being used for a movie by this actor, but the actor actually bought it for, like, the actor bought the house first.
Oh, wow.
Like, just bought the house. So, like,
knowing
the apartments
the history,
were gone.
Obviously.
Yeah, knowing the history, bought the house, and then it was then being, like, they were using it for a movie as well. That was good old Nicolas Cage.
Dude, Nicky Cage.
Nicky Cage.
Nicky Cage bought the house.
Yeah, he bought the house in, like, the early, like, or, like, mid-2000s. I think it was 2009.
So this is after he sold the Declaration of Independence?
Yes, after he used very much the money from stealing the Declaration of Independence to buy this house. Because it was not a cheap house. Like, this is still, like, a massive, gorgeous mansion in the middle of, like, New Orleans, a city that is very expensive. Like, this was a very expensive house. He bought it. He ended up living there for a time being. I do believe, like I said, involved in a movie. And then he actually goes bankrupt in the middle of... He goes bankrupt in the middle of the movie and all this stuff. So he ends up having to sell the house. He sells the house. There's a lot of stories, too. And, like, you know, a lot of people... And, again, I don't know how much I believe, but, like, his career was going pretty friggin' well up until he owned this house.
I heard that there was a year where he spent, like, $140 million.
Yes.
Or something like that.
No, like, I don't think... I'm not, like... Let me put it this way. I don't think the Madame Delphine ghost is taking his Amex out of his pocket. and he very swiping much did it to it. Himself. Yeah, like he definitely did. Like I think he bought like a dinosaur skull for like a couple million dollars.
And then he had to give it back.
Yeah, he had to give it back because it was stolen. Yeah. He didn't know that. He was out like something crazy like $20 million for this dinosaur skeleton.
Something ridiculous.
But like, so again, I don't think she was taking the credit card out of his pocket and swiping, but he had a very good time. And then, you know, things hit the fan pretty hard for him after he bought the house. So he ends up selling the house. And there's, just a lot of stuff. Now that, like, the house is actually privately owned now. It's owned by an oil tycoon. I don't know. I think the person who owns it, the oil tycoon that owns it, like, has enough money where I don't think they're staying there often slash if at all. But there is, like, a lot of, like, if someone steps foot inside the house, like, there is a lot of, like, darkness that follows them in their life after. So it'll be interesting to follow up and see where that goes. I would love to interview Nick Cage and, like, dude, what is his experience in the house and stuff like that? Because I think, like, you know, awesome actor. Like, definitely hilarious when
has
he
been in, like, every single movie in the last 20 years because he needs the money.
Yes. But, like, it, you know, just real, like, what were your experience? I would be so curious just to have anyone that, like, has been in that house, but, like, him specifically would be pretty fucking awesome. So, I don't know, man. What do you think? Haunted or nah?
I would say definitely haunted. I'm hoping it's only haunted by Delphine and not by the enslaved people. I hope that they got to move on.
So it's funny you say that because there actually has been like mediums and stuff that have gone in and felt there. Say there is a very negative presence and stuff like that, but there have been accounts where there have been mediums that have said that, like, that there was only one energy. They were like, oh, this happened here, and we can feel this here. We can feel that this happened here, but we can only feel that there's one spirit in here. So there it might just be some peace for those that were affected. Like, her crimes, her actions might have been so inhumane that they're was mercy from someone or somewhere along the way that they got to move on. So, yeah.
So that's...
But that was only, like, I think that might have been one or two mediums that felt that. So it's not like everyone felt that.
But if we're taking that to heart, then I guess there was some semblance of justice.
Yeah.
In that she didn't get locked away in her lifetime, but she got locked away in her past.
Yep.
Or in her post lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. So, oh man.
Dude, that was a whirlwind of a story.
Right? I thought that, like I said, I got so much deeper into that than I thought I was going.
Yeah, that was intense.
Yeah. So, episode 2 in the books.
In the books, dude. Please go visit our Instagram at Spirits on Spirits Pod to see the pictures that we were talking about in this episode. And also, we'll give you a picture and a recipe for the cocktail that we were enjoying, the Sazerac.
Nice. Yeah, if you made it this far, we appreciate you guys listening and kind of helping us get off the ground. We love doing this. We count down the minutes until we get to do it. So if we can continue to do this, if this is something that you guys are enjoying, please, please like and subscribe. I hate that I just said that.
Yeah.
But
also comment if you have anything, any stories that you'd like us to cover or any like recommendations for us. We're only 2 episodes deep, so we're open to any suggestions that you guys have.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we want to do, we're like, as of right now, we're going to plow forward with like this, like any, like each episode is going to be a new city, new town, location. So like if you guys are like live somewhere and you're like, we'd love for you to cover this house or this place, like please, please, please let us know. Because I think that makes it just so much more fun and engaging for us if you guys are involved, but also for y'all out there too. So
yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
All right, well cheers, guys.
Cheers. Stay spooky.
Stay spooky.